Listen and stream the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.
It's now 2 minutes after 12. Good afternoon and welcome to Freedom 106.5 FM. My name is Samantha and I want to welcome you to Diabetes and You, where we are joined every Thursday from 12 by the president of the Diabetes Association of Trinidad and Tobago, Mr. Andrew Danu. Good afternoon, Andrew.
Good afternoon, Samantha. How are you doing today?
I am well, thank you. And what about you?
Very busy, very hectic, because this weekend we have our camp. We postponed it from last week to this week because we had many of the children who weren't able to make it last week. So we decided to include more of them. So this weekend is going to be our camp. So the office is hectic. We have so many things going on, but of course we have so much help. So we're very grateful for that.
And again, the camp is at the Preysal Secondary School, am I correct?
Yes. So we're having it this year at Preysal Secondary. A central location that a lot of children can attend. So we're having it there this year. We had it there a few years ago, so it was a really nice space for us to do it. Again, we're doing it this year at Preysal Saturday and Sunday this week.
All right, so that's awesome. Postponed to this weekend, the Diabetes Association of Trinidad and Tobago will be hosting its children with their diabetes camp at the Preysal Secondary School. And also, another thing that's happening is the association's raffle.
Yes. So officially, we extended the raffle draw date to November 30th. Because, of course, November is Diabetes Month, and we have lots of things going on in November, and we know a lot of people haven't been able to get their raffle tickets as yet. So we are going to extend the raffle day till then, and then look out for us. We're in lots of places. You could get raffle tickets from anyone at the association. You could call us, or you can even go to win.car, WINDATTCAR, and you could be able to get the raffle tickets there as well. Raffle tickets are, again, $20 for one. And you could win a Honda City CNG as well as 30 other prizes. Lots of really nice, excited prizes. And with those funds, of course, we're expanding and improving our services at the association, improving our clinic facilities, our education and outreach facilities. And we're going to be able to reach more persons and help more persons with that. So help us help you. That's what we need.
And we're not done yet. So the Diabetes Association's children's camp happening this weekend. There's also that raffle that has been extended to the 30th of November, and the tickets are available at all DAT offices, including on their website, win.car.com. Am I correct?
Yes.
And we're not done yet. Diabetes Awareness Month. What's going to be happening then, Andrew?
So November is coming up very quickly. November 14th is World Diabetes Day. And for the entire month of November, we celebrate and we mark Diabetes Awareness Month with a host of activities across the country. And of course, throughout the world, many organizations, other diabetes associations will have activities. We here in Trinidad are going to be, well, again, this is the first year for 2 years that we could actually do in-person activities. So we're very excited about that. So we're going to be having our 5K. Last time we had our 5K was 2019. So a 5K is called Run That, as in DATT. So Run That. So when you know you finish a 5K, you could say I run that. But we also have a walk component. So you could walk that, and you could also have a ride component where you could have your bicycle and you could ride as well. So you could walk that, run that, ride that. Our primary sponsor, our title sponsor is Tattle. And we're going to be launching it very soon. Persons are going to be able to know how to register, and you can get a lot of goodies. You get your t-shirts and your medals and stuff. So we're expecting about 1,000 persons. We're going to be hosting it in Chaguanas this year. Next year, we're going to host it in Port of Spain. But this year, we're going to host it in Chaguanas like we did in 2019. And we're actually going to make a human blue circle. In 2019, we made the largest human blue circle. So blue circle, again, is the symbol for diabetes. So in 2019, we made a blue circle with about 800 persons. This year, we need to break that record. And we're trying to get Guinness to come down and see if we could break the, well, there isn't a record as yet. So we want to establish a record. So next year, we're going to have thousands of persons in that human blue circle to recognize diabetes.
Awesome indeed. And now after that introduction, all the things that the Diabetes Association in Trinidad and Tobago are doing and involved in, and you can get involved and participate, all right? Be part of that community. We want to roll into today's topic of discussion, which is diabetes in children. And we're having this conversation with our very special guest, who is Dr. Navendra Prasad. He is a specialist physician. He graduated in 2006 and completed fellowships in diabetes and endocrinology under the Royal College of Physicians, Edinburgh. While there, he did work that was focused on adolescent diabetes and endocrinology. Dr. Prasad is currently a specialist physician at the New Point Fortin Hospital and has a practice at the Gulfview Medical Center. He runs the adolescent outpatient clinic dedicated to care for adolescents with diabetes and endocrine disorders. And that's the only one of its kind in the Caribbean. Welcome, Dr. Prasad, to Diabetes and You.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you.
Hi, Dr. Prasad. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm very happy that you took up this invitation to be part of this and to educate persons about diabetes and especially type 1 diabetes and how it affects children. Especially as we're on the heels of our camp this year, or every year when we come in close to camp, we always take the opportunity to educate persons about diabetes, educate persons who may not know that children could get diabetes, and about how, or rather, the impact that diabetes may have on these lives and the lives of their families. So before we get into some more about what you do, can you just remind us, because we've been telling our listeners for the last few weeks about diabetes, but can you remind us a little bit more about what type 1 diabetes, why does it occur, how does it occur, when does it happen over the course of life? Tell us a little bit more about type 1 diabetes.
So type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disorder. Basically, the body produces antibodies which attacks the cells which produce insulin in the body. So we have two peaks. We have one peak which usually occurs around puberty, and another peak which occurs in the middle age, which is often forgotten that we actually do have quite a lot of adults with type 1 diabetes. But we're focusing here today more on the kids, and we'll see type 1 diabetes. The youngest one I've seen in Trinidad was diagnosed at 9 months. Well, they're usually managed by the pediatricians when they are so young. I would usually start managing them from as young as 6 years old.
Okay.
And this is something genetic. It's not lifestyle. You cannot try diet, exercise. There's nothing that the child can do about it. And this is the misinformation that is often spread. Or the look for it. You wasn't eating good. There's nothing the child can do about it. There's nothing the parents can do about it. They develop this disorder, this problem. Their body cannot produce any more insulin. And it's actually very easy in terms of the management. It's simply to replace the insulin that is needed. Now, it's easier said than done, because insulin production, the surges is based on the foods you eat. So yes, they need to stick to a diet, but that is more to prevent the spikes in the sugar. Rather than to say that, oh, if you eliminate all carbohydrates, your diabetes would be under control. That's actually a dangerous practice, as it could send these children into a coma.
Yeah, and I'm very happy that you mentioned that, because many persons with diabetes seem to listen to these fads that they may be getting information from online that, you know, they need to cut off carbohydrates totally, or they need to have low carbohydrate diets. And many of them fall into hypoglycemic episodes, especially for children. So we'll talk a little bit more about that, but I'm very happy that you did mention that for children with type 1 diabetes, there's really no fault of their own. And many persons in Trinidad don't understand as yet what type 1 diabetes is. We do have children with type 1 diabetes, and also we do have children with type 2 diabetes, which of course, as we would have called or would have referred to before, as adult onset diabetes. But specifically talking about type 1, because this is what we're focusing on. This is the form that, of course, it's autoimmune, and we're not entirely sure why it happens, but it's no fault of the child, no fault of the parents. But for parents who may be worried about their children having diabetes or developing diabetes, what may be the warning signs? What can they look out for that may say, okay, the child may be developing type 1 diabetes, or the child may be developing diabetes? What can they look out for?
So in type 1 diabetes, the main things you would look at is rapid weight loss, and the child will be passing a lot of urine very often. So it's rapid weight loss and basically passing a lot of urine. And what is actually a very common sign in kids is more with boys and girls, but the parents notice ants in the toilet.
Mm.
Because they start passing a lot of sugar in the urine and ants come there.
Mm-hmm. That's actually something I remember the minister making this statement a while ago. The first blood sugar test in Trinidad was when you used to see ants by the mango tree where, you know, you used to urinate there. So I think it's very interesting that you say that, seeing those signs. I also know that some parents would have seen the child wetting the bed. So frequent urination causing them to wet the bed when they've never done before. But when we talk about the warning signs, how quickly does this occur? Does it happen over the course of a few years? Does it happen over the course of a few days? In what period would you start to see these signs?
So the interesting thing with type 1 diabetes, it is not something that usually happens very rapidly, and it's very variable. So so it's antibody destruction of the beta cells. You could actually find that occur taken over 10 years before they will develop symptoms, to as little as from the onset of the antibodies appearing. It could take as little as 6 weeks.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So there is no set timeline to say where your child would be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's very important to note. But of course, when you do see those signs, I mean, that's when you should consult your doctor, consult your pediatrician to get tests, to see what's going on, because at that point, it's most important for intervention. And we're going to be talking a lot more with Dr. Prasad after the break.
Join the chat now on the all-new Freedom on the all-new Talk Radio 106.5.
And you are listening to Diabetes and You here at Freedom 106.5 FM. I do believe we have, I thought we did, we had a caller who would like to speak to our guest. But again, if you would like to speak to either the president of the Diabetes Association or our special guest, Dr. Navindra Prasad, do feel free to give us a call and or send that WhatsApp message with your question. Andrew?
Thanks, Samantha. And thanks, Dr. Prasad, again, for joining us. And we were just talking about type 1 diabetes, and we mentioned how parents could identify it in children. But when children become diagnosed with diabetes, we know that there's a vast amount of changes that they make in their lives. And I mean, these children, as you said, from a few months old to in their teens, lots of changes they need to make. Adults who are diagnosed with diabetes can't even cope sometimes. But one of the major changes, of course, their medication, the medications that they need to take, specifically insulin. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about the insulin regimes, or the insulin that children need to take. Why do they need to take insulin, and how do they take insulin? How often do they need to take insulin?
Right. So in terms of the insulin, these children, we have to remember, most of them can't produce any insulin whatsoever. Some still have a little bit of insulin being produced. Within a few years, that will all go. So we need to mimic the same way that someone who is not diabetic, how their insulin production will be. And what is a common misconception is that people think that if you don't eat anything, you don't need insulin. Mm-hmm. But we have what we call the basal insulin, which is the amount of insulin your body has during a starving period.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the prandial, or the insulin that is needed to take care of any meals.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to try to mimic this. So there is, in the private sector, there is a basal insulin, which is a long-lasting insulin, which is used once a day. And the other insulin they take is the rapid-acting insulin, which is on government formulary, DSR. And privately, we also have a Pedra as a short-acting insulin, which kids can use. Both of them are used for the meals the child eats. Now, here's the trick in this. You don't eat the same amount of carbohydrates every meal. And the old thinking was, we need to make people eat the same amount of carbs per meal so that they will have the amount of carbs for the insulin they are taking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've moved away from that, and we've been starting to try to encourage the children and the parents to start doing carbohydrate counting.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if a child has some steamed vegetables grilled chicken breast and let's say half of a sweet potato. That's a small amount of carbohydrates right there. Let's compare that with they go out, they have two slices of pizza. That's about 8 to 10 times the amount of carbohydrates. So in one situation, the child would cut a meal where they had less carbohydrates they would normally have. And the other situation, they have a very, very high carbohydrate meal. That if we don't adjust the insulin for their meals, then the child's sugar could either spike or it could go very low. So we need to start addressing this. And these children have to take insulin at least 4 times a day, some 5 times, because in the public sector, the N-insulin that we use is, as a basal insulin, is a twice-a-day insulin. So it's multiple injections, and there's a risk of the irritation to the skin. They could have lumps forming, what we call liposclerosis, in which case they now have to avoid those areas. With the older needles that we have, they are more painful. They don't hurt much, but they are more painful, and it's annoying to children, and especially in the teenage years where they're trying to become normal, we have a problem with them rebelling. And it's about trying to talk to them, get them to understand why they need to use it, how to best adjust it. A lot of them don't want anyone to know they're diabetic, and how to manage this in secret.
Very big thing. And you mentioned managed in secret and how to manage it. And again, with having these little bit older ones, these teenagers rebelling, we've seen that. And of course, that's the reason why we have our camps for children with diabetes, because many of these children feel isolated. Many of these children may not have or are able to encounter or interact with any other child outside the clinic setting. So an activity like this would be able to have children come out of that clinical setting and interact with children, seeing that they're not alone, seeing that they could get that help. So in terms of insulin, I mean, we know how impactful it can be taking these injections. You've mentioned as well, taking it in secret. But of course, we're trying now at the association to educate children more, educate teachers, because we've had teachers who've told parents, you know, the child can't bring the needles to school or they can't bring the lancets to school because they could choke somebody else and that could be a hazard. I mean, that's nonsense. So one of the initiatives we're going to be launching soon at the association is a project where we're going to be educating teachers about children with diabetes, how to take care of them and the things that they should know. And of course, educating other children, because I know and one time a child said that children were telling them they were taking drugs because they were taking the insulin. So, you know, providing those safe spaces for children to take insulin as well in schools, very, very important. And you would have mentioned about the impact it has on these children. Besides taking the insulin, you specifically would be interacting with the adolescent children, with the children who are a little bit older in their teenage years. What have you seen differently in these children? Meaning that, what are the challenges? What do you think the main challenges are for management for these children, the adolescents, that is, managing their...
So the main challenge to me in the adolescent age group is how do we get their diabetes management to cope with their lifestyle, what they want to do. Exercise is a big thing. They need to be able to adjust their insulin and their meals to exercise. Something so simple as you go into play football for an hour, which we take for granted. We can do that. I have my kids who play cricket, volleyball, basketball, and after the 30-minute mark goes, their sugar goes low. And it's something we take for granted. And when you're playing and you're caught up in it, you forget. You know you're supposed to stop after 30 minutes. I need to have something to eat. I need to check my sugar. I need to have something to eat, otherwise I'm going to go low. They may think they're just tired, for the ones who have not experienced it, and just said they need to take a break. They didn't walk with their blood sugar kit and didn't realize their sugar was going low, and they collapse after. So it's simple things like that. Then when they go out with friends, they go to a friend's birthday party, they're the only child, especially the younger ones, who aren't allowed to have the cake and ice cream. Some of them are pressured into it. I had a child a couple years ago, didn't want to, but the parent did not know that child was diabetic. The child didn't want to say anything. Mm-hmm. And it's like, just take a small piece, look everybody else having, and they felt left out.
Mm-hmm.
So they did have a piece of cake, they did have a piece of ice cream. And when they went home, their sugar was over 500.
Wow.
And then the parent was, why do this? And no, and the parent too was understanding where the child is coming from, but the parent is also worried about what will happen to their child. And the parent was concerned if they should probably just not let their child go to any parties, any birthday party. Have the child skip out on these events because the pressure that the child is put under.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's about educating others about how to manage this.
Exactly.
Then the pubertal aspect is another big thing. If your diabetes is not well controlled, you will not start puberty or you will have delayed puberty. And the psychological impact on this on these children is significant.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
they know what everybody else has experienced and they are not.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember when I had now started as a house officer, this would have been about 12 or 13 years ago at least.
Mm-hmm.
I had a girl who was 13 years old, did not have any pubertal changes as yet. Her diabetes was extremely poorly controlled. Her blood sugars would not go under 350. After we adjusted her medication, got her insulin on track, this girl, within 3 months, pubertal changes started happening. I remember I've never seen a child, a girl, so happy to have her first period.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because all her friends have been going through this for the last 2 or 3 years. She is not.
Mm-hmm.
And behind their back, children talk, other kids talk. She would be left out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are so many things, so many issues we need to talk about for these children. And I mean, removing the stigma of children with diabetes, of course, by increasing education. Yeah. And through education of children, other children, education of parents, of personnel in the school, we'll be able to make strides towards removing the stigma and, again, making it a little bit more comfortable for these children who have so much to go through. We're going to be talking a lot more with Dr. Prasad after the break, and then Samantha is going to take over from me.
Thank you so much, Andrew.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
You're listening to Diabetes and You here on Freedom 106.5 FM. Every Thursday from 12, I am joined by the president of the Diabetes Association of Trinidad and Tobago, Mr. Andrew Danu. And today with us is a special guest, Dr. Vindra Prasad, who is a specialist physician as we discuss diabetes in children. Good afternoon once again, Dr. Prasad.
Hi, good afternoon.
Why did you decide to go into this field, you know, working with children and adolescents with diabetes?
So the one thing that I like about diabetes and endocrinology is with this, it's basically most cases for diabetes and endocrinology, it's hormones the body either producing too much or too little. And it's very easy to fix. We give medication to block if you're producing too much. And if that doesn't work, we surgically remove it and we replace the hormones. We could give you a good quality of life to the point that you are back to normal.
Wow.
I don't know any other area that you could actually say that after you treat a patient, you will be back to normal.
That is very interesting indeed. So what kind of effect, if we just look at diabetes, does it have on the family of children who have diabetes?
So what I tell the families, when you have one child with diabetes, the entire family has diabetes. There is nothing about, okay, it's just one, and it will usually be the youngest one. And this one has, but then the other one wants a snack, the other one wants to go out. You deprive one child, that child feels left out. They get isolated. The entire family now has to adjust to how to make life work for that sick one, because you want to give them back to normal. And like I said before, once you treat these patients properly, they do get a normal life. In terms of jobs, I remember, I could tell you just last year, I believe it was, pilots who are on insulin have finally been given the okay to fly transatlantic flights. and Trans-Pacific flights. That was banned despite they having very good control. It was easier for you to be an astronaut than it was for you to be a taxi driver in the UK up to just 5 years ago. We have the technology now. We have better medication. We could ensure that your sugar is well controlled. So I only spoke about the multiple daily injections for the diabetes, but they are insulin pumps. This is a device we simply attach to them. It will put in the settings as to how much insulin they will be on. The patient, when they eat, will just put in how much carbohydrates they're having, and the pump will release more insulin based on the amount of carbohydrates they have. And now we also have the continuous glucose monitors, some of which automatically check your sugar every 5 minutes. And if your sugar goes too high or too low, an alarm is set off to warn you. This is where we are internationally. In Trinidad, we should be getting a pump finally later this year, as well as a CGM that is affordable. But insulin pumps have been around since the 1970s worldwide. Trinidad has none. We're talking about, this is 50 years and we still have not had a pump. Instead, these poor children have to inject themselves every day, 4 to 5 times a day. And internationally, I could tell you the complications seen because of type 1 diabetes has been going down. In Trinidad, we have not noticed a difference. In terms of the long-term complications, we've been seeing better short-term progress in terms of fewer admissions to hospital for any emergency because of type 1 diabetes. But long-term, in terms of the kidney damage, risk of them getting heart attacks, strokes later on in life, has not budged. And that is mainly to do with the education isn't there, the medication isn't readily available, and the rest of the world is far ahead of where we are. When I was in Scotland and I told them how we manage type 1 diabetes in Trinidad, the medication that we use, they said, oh yeah, this is how we did it back in the 1980s. That's just to give you an idea. We are really far behind.
And Dr. Prasad, I can hear the frustration in your voice. Of course, Dr. Navendra Prasad is here with us on diabetes and you discussing diabetes in children. You're speaking there about how the lack of resources in Trinidad and Tobago is basically influencing daily life for children with diabetes and their families. But what influence does diabetes have on children going through puberty specifically?
So in terms of puberty directly, one, a lot of them have delayed puberty, and diabetes, type 1 diabetes being an autoimmune problem, there is a small risk that they could actually have no pubertal development. So they could have the sexual hormones for puberty. They may have an autoimmune disorder which would affect them from producing those. So I speak to all my kids about the changes to expect. If they don't have the changes for the girls, if they don't see their period for 3 months and their diabetes is well controlled, I advise them we need to have some tests done to see if they are going through reproductive failure, and in which case we have to start them on hormonal treatment. So that's one aspect. Then in terms of puberty itself, the big thing with puberty, besides the body changes, we also have to remember the mindset. During puberty is when you start to try to gain more independence. Diabetes limits them from getting this independence. They don't get to go out with other kids. They don't get to play sports that other kids are getting to play. Their diet is strictly monitored. Teenagers are treated like little children, and they will watch their younger sibling getting more freedom than they get. And they don't understand why they aren't given the same. Now, I try to address this by speaking more to the parents and counseling them as to how we could manage to give them a more normal teenage life. Advise them on the freedoms they can get, what they're allowed to do. And a lot of it is dependent on the child following their diet and checking their sugars when they're out. If they don't check their sugars when they're out, when they're playing sports, then they will lose that privilege. And of course, they don't even want their friends to find out that they have diabetes, so they don't want to check their sugar. So a lot of them remain isolated. And this is why the CGM is so key. Nobody will know that they have this device on that is automatically checking their sugar, and they get a normal life. The psychological impact on type 1 diabetes on children is astronomical. Let's not talk about Trinidad. Let me tell you about where I trained in the UK. We had an adolescent clinic there. At least 25% of those children had a psychologist attached to them because their issues are so vast. And the camp, for example, that the Diabetes Association is having, what is so fantastic about the camp is a lot of the problems that the kids have, they aren't going to tell me. They aren't going to talk to their friends. But when they see another child with type 1 diabetes, someone their own age, they will start talking to them. And that's when the issues really come out. And another big issue we have is sex education. I can't emphasize that enough. We have to talk to them about sex education and the long-term implications of diabetes with their reproductive health. That's something I go into great detail with to all my kids. Their parents are there. They understand the importance of it. And children listen.
Now, Dr. Basad, I did not even realize that this was so extensive when it came to discussing diabetes in children. This is a lot to talk about. We're definitely going to have you back on diabetes and you. But I would like to quickly end with a final question, at least from me. So when a child is diagnosed at a very early age with diabetes and they are enrolled in the pediatric clinic, as we were discussing independence, as they get older, how do we transition them into an adult clinic?
So the clinic that I have, so I'm an adult physician and I did training specifically for adolescent diabetes and endocrinology. So from the pediatric clinic, they go to the adolescent clinic, and after that I will prepare them for the adult clinic. So they will know what to expect, what is required of them now, because they are no longer kids and they will be treated as an adult. So I prepare them for what to expect.
Thank you so very much, Dr. Navindra Prasad. As I was stressing here, Andrew, I think we definitely are going to have Dr. Prasad back on diabetes and you. I really did not realize that this was such an extensive conversation.
It is, exactly. There's so much we could talk about and it's so impactful, the things that he's been saying.
So, Dr. Navindra Prasad, thank you so very much for being here with us on Diabetes and You as we discussed diabetes in children here at Freedom 106.5 FM.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. I'm very happy to have this opportunity to have these talks because we need to get the information out there to educate the public. It's not just the kids and the families who have diabetes, it's the rest of the public. And to know how and not treat these children like they are diseased, like they have leprosy, because that's basically what happens.
Thanks so much for that, Dr. Prasad. We really appreciate all that you do, all that you've been doing to the children, and of course, all of the support that you give the association. So thank you so much, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you again.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
And you are listening to Diabetes and You with the president of the Diabetes Association of Trinidad and Tobago, Mr. Andrew Danu. Andrew, what is trending?
So today we want to talk a little bit about Alzheimer's disease. It's a disease that is impacting more and more persons because, of course, populations around the world are aging. We're having more and more elderly persons. Persons are living longer, but we're also seeing Alzheimer's disease popping up more and more. Of course, as you know, this disease is associated with loss of memory and impaired cognitive function. Some research coming out of South Australia this month says that long-term high-fat diets, so eating a lot of fat, doesn't just cause you to gain weight, but it also shrinks your brain. So they did some studies on mice and they realized that mice that eat more fatty foods or foods that are higher in fat, they don't just gain weight. And of course, gaining weight means that they develop diabetes. But these same mice also tend to develop, as they get older, signs of Alzheimer's disease, where they lose brain function, they lose memory. So when it comes to your diet, when it comes to what you eat, it's not just about the short-term effects of your weight. It's not just about the effects of getting diabetes, but also persons who do have diabetes, persons who are overweight, actually tend to have a higher risk. of developing these memory loss diseases as they get older in life. So it's something to look out for, something to consider when thinking about the impact of your health, not just, you know, what's happening to you right now, but what could happen to you down the road and what types of impairments you could develop because of poor diet, because of excess fat consumption. So again, it's very important to talk with your nutritionist. If you are having a problem with your diet, if you need some advice, you could contact the Diabetes Association. We have free nutritional counseling every Wednesday at our head office in Trigonas, and we've also started at our Arima location. You can call us at 607-3288 to make an appointment to speak to one of our nutritionists or registered dietitians about your diet and how you can be able to control what you eat, how you can be able to manage your numbers through nutrition.
All right. That's very interesting indeed, that long-term high-fat diet can expand the waistline and shrink the brain. I know you've mentioned this a couple times about, you know, alcohol as a weight management tip when it comes to diabetes.
So when thinking about, and we're going to talk a little bit more about alcohol, I think we could dedicate an entire show on alcohol because persons with diabetes, lots of persons with diabetes drink alcohol and they're not entirely sure of alcohol, meaning that sometimes they may drink alcohol thinking that alcohol could actually raise your blood sugar and drop your sugar depending on what you consume with it. So we're going to probably dedicate an entire show coming close down to Christmas time where we're going to talk a little bit more about alcohol. But specifically, when you are drinking alcohol, you want to limit how much you drink, first of all. But if you really are drinking alcohol, then you try to consume spirits that contain less sugar. So yeah, the blood sugars wouldn't rise as much because some alcoholic beverages may have as much sugars in them as eating some sweets or eating very high carbohydrate meals. So you limit how much you consume, but you also limit the type. So for example, if you're choosing a spirit, clear spirits are better than the dark spirits because, of course, they have lower sugar content. And if you're using mixers, then mixers that are lower in sugar or sugar-free may be a better option to use. So you try to overall decrease the amount of sugar that you consume, of course, if you're living with diabetes. But we're going to talk about alcohol some more in the coming weeks because alcohol could also drop your sugar very, very low. And this could actually be very, very dangerous for you because dropping your blood sugars, when your sugars drop low, it actually feels pretty similar to when you're feeling tipsy or when you're intoxicated. So those two feelings mixed together, you're not entirely sure what's happening, and your blood sugars could be going very low. And again, that'll be very, very dangerous. So we will address this in the coming weeks as we talk about alcohol some more.
And I expect to be just as surprised as I was today when discussing diabetes in children. I imagine that when we start to talk about alcohol, it will also be a very extensive conversation.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, we're going to be going in depth into these topics. There's so much you can learn about diabetes, about prevention, about care. Because again, we want to educate persons. So we encourage persons to call, encourage persons to reach out to us. And if you want to hear about a topic, if you want us to discuss something, you could reach out to us as well and tell us what you want to hear us talk about. And we'll be sure to address that topic as well.
Thank you so much, Andrew. This week flew by. It went by so quickly that because, you know, Dr. Navendra Prasad definitely was very passionate about discussing diabetes and children. So, you know, it was so much information. I think we hardly got an opportunity to even connect with the public. So we want to invite you that next week, Thursday from 12 to connect with us on Diabetes and You. Andrew, thank you so very much. And I look forward to being with you and chatting more on diabetes next week.
Thanks, Samantha. Have a great day.
Same to you. And this is Diabetes and You here at Freedom 106.5 FM, where we are joined every Thursday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. by the president of the Diabetes Association of Trinidad and Tobago, Mr. Andrew Danu. And he is also a director of the Trinidad and Tobago NCD Alliance and serves on the Ministry of Health Food Advisory Committee. A reminder that every Thursday here at Freedom, we discuss diabetes and you.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.